Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
It's slightly disappointing not to have received some new accolades there. So if you could just imagine that I might have done some other things other than those that Sian's just set out. So thank you very much for the opportunity of speaking to you today. As Sian said, I lead services in PA to the higher education sector internationally. So I have worked with quite a lot of universities as they deal with the new world in which they find themselves, the world of students' fees, of competition, and so on. Say a little bit more about that at the moment. What I thought I would do today would be to offer some views on the relationship between business schools and universities, specifically in order to address issues that Steve has just been outlining, that the need to do things that are really important for our economy and our society and to respond to the business agenda. excuse me. So let me start by just saying something about higher education in the UK as a bit of context. Six irreversible changes to UK higher education. We could argue, I dare say, about whether they really are irreversible. Many of them are not fundamentally irreversible, but my suggestion is that they won't nevertheless be reversed, regardless of political shades of future governments and so on. The first is that government no longer funds providers, nor does it manage the supply side. Government sees itself as a regulator. Clearly, it is putting funding in, but it's putting funding in indirectly through fees, subsidies to student loans. Clearly, it's still refunding the research agenda and so on. But it's a different sort of relationship that government has. That means that universities fundamentally have to earn their living from tuition fees and other services as opposed to being given grants. And it means that students are now paying customers rather than the beneficiaries of higher education. So for all three constituencies, government, universities and students, the relationship has changed. Universities are competing both with each other but also with other forms of post-secondary school provision. And I guess we're going to see a lot more of that emerge in the near future. And as a result of that, students but also parents and employers are questioning the value of traditional models of higher education. 3-year undergraduate degree-based courses and then postgraduate education following that. The final thing that certainly is irreversible is the role of technology that is changing the way that content is organised and managed and the way that individuals access that content as part of higher education. So six big changes to the environment. What does that mean? Apologies if you can't read that. I don't know if you can. Those at the front of the room can. Those at the back, you're going to have to take my word for it. Apologies for that. What we've done here is set out four kind of big shifts in the environment in which universities and indeed business schools operate. The first we call from planning to competitive uncertainty. Talked about that, the increased competition. That's only going to get more aggressive, international competition and so on, competition between universities, between the traditional public sector and private providers and so on. The second shift is from peer-assessed research to research based on impact and relevance. Clearly, that's been going on for a while. We've seen the importance of impact for some time. It feels to me like that's only going to get more so in the future, and we may be entering a more, or rather a less benign research funding environment than we've hitherto had. That's going to make the need to demonstrate impact even greater. The third shift is from regulatory compliance to risk management. Instead of universities being required to respond to a set of rules, they're now having to manage their risk, whether that's the risk of an international campus expansion or the risk of a new business venture or the risk of a particular set of marketing activities designed to recruit new students. A different sort of dynamic which has quite important implications for the management capability of the university. The last one is interesting. We call it from public services to social businesses. And I think universities are only beginning to understand what that means, to see themselves as businesses that have a social purpose as opposed to being part of the public sector that is funded by the government of the day. I think that's very important and is only beginning to manifest itself in terms of what universities do. I thought I'd just break for a moment and show you a quote. I'm very nervous of doing this in front of this very distinguished audience of business academics, but I'm going to put up a quote from Theodore Levitt's seminal article, Marketing Myopia, published in Harvard Business Review in 1960. I'm sure you're aware of this. This is his piece about the railroads in the U.S., and why they were in trouble. And he says they're in trouble today not because the need was filled by others, but because it was not filled by the railroads themselves. They let others take away the customers from them because they assumed themselves to be in the railroad business rather than the transportation business. Now, why have I put that up? I've done it because we do this with universities as an analogy of the place that universities, if they're not careful, today find themselves. So if we wind forward 10 years from now, how do we avoid this scenario in 10 years' time? This is the same quote reframed around universities. Imagine in 2024 saying they're in trouble today not because their need was filled by others, private providers, web services and so on, but because it was not filled by the universities themselves. And that was because they assumed themselves to be in the university business rather than the purposeful learning business. Now, we use that to make universities think about the business that they're in, and are they pursuing an old model of education? And interestingly, I think our business schools are part of that, or are they distinct from it? And I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. Frequently, higher education institutions in the UK conceive of themselves in the university business, defined actually in terms that have changed little in 100 years, defined around a three-year program for undergraduates and then postgraduate education after that. That's made up of three terms a year that are defined around the agricultural calendar of when the harvest is and so on, and a model that really doesn't take account of our modern ways of learning and the use of technology and so on. But meanwhile, the stakeholders, the students, the businesses that are involved with universities have moved on and are moved on to a world of what we've defined here in fairly generic terms as purposeful learning and problem solving, which is what they want universities to be doing. And students are still assumed to be in the going to university market rather than in the preparing for 21st century life market, the kinds of things that Steve was just talking about, preparing students for the future. Now, that, I think, is interesting because one of the suggestions we make to universities is that it isn't actually government funding changes, it isn't technology, it isn't even competition that's the biggest threat to universities. It's actually relevance. It's the relevance of what they are doing to the modern world. Now, clearly, lots of universities are doing things to address exactly these issues, but there's an interesting question about whether the core of what universities are doing is sufficiently relevant to the changing world. Now, as a consultant, I have a nice 3x3 matrix to try and resolve this conundrum. What this does, and this can apply to universities, it can apply to business schools, it can apply to faculties or anything within any academic organisation. What we've done here very simplistically is two axes. The horizontal is the balance of strengths and weaknesses of the institution concerned. So the mix of academic strengths, financial strength, reputational strength, the partnerships it has and so on, everything that makes it good at what it does. And on the vertical axis, we've got the strategic focus, the extent to which the organization is consolidating what it does, extending into new areas, or fundamentally exploring new and different markets and different propositions and so on. And what we seek to do is to plot universities and indeed business schools onto this matrix. And there are a number of different groups that we can see there. The first group is what we call the oligarchs, the ones that have such high balance of strengths that actually they don't really need to be in the top box, they don't need to explore new markets, but they need to be willing to adapt to the world, but they have some ability to shape that market as well as adapt to it. And you probably know who those are. We could have a discussion about the sorts of names that are in there. There are clearly some names in the UK and elsewhere that would consider themselves oligarchs. The second group is what we call innovators. These are ones that are not as strong, the ones that have less of an academic reputation, that don't have perhaps the same degree of partnerships, the ability to invest and so on, but have some really interesting innovative ideas about the markets in which they should operate. And we call those the innovators. The third group we call the zombies, that are vulnerable but not doing anything other than consolidating their position. Clearly, if you don't have a great balance of strengths and weaknesses, seeking to consolidate your position is not the right answer. There are a surprising number of universities, I think, that are in that box, that are not dying, and universities in the UK are not dying. They're mostly doing pretty well financially, but they are nevertheless becoming zombies in the sense that they are not developing new ideas and new markets. They're becoming increasingly irrelevant to the modern world, and perhaps actually getting smaller over time as well as they seek to reduce their costs to fit their revenue, which results in a poorer level of student experience and so on, which results in the need to reduce costs again in the following year. And you get into this sort of cycle of zombie living death, which is almost worse than going bust. Perhaps not quite, but it can feel like that. Actually, most universities are somewhere in the middle, and we call them the not-yetties. These are the organisations that, as you would expect from me, need my kind of help to help them move up the chart to become innovators. An interesting exercise, I think, for universities and indeed business schools to reflect on where they are on that chart you may be, as I speak, reflecting on where you are there. And what happens, of course, is when you get into the detail, there are elements of what you do that are in all parts of that chart, typically. There are things that you do that are oligarch-like. There are things that are innovation, and there are things that are probably zombie as well. I wanted to say something about where business schools fit into the landscape, and I've been sort of talking about that as I go along, but it's worth, I think, just reflecting on the relationship between universities and business schools, which is, as you'll know, highly variable and in many cases not as good as it could be. The relationship between the host institution and the business school, if there is one, and indeed between a business school and other universities, is perhaps not as powerful as it might be, and is perhaps not used to drive innovation in the way that it might be. And that's what I want to say a little bit more about in a moment. But how do universities see business schools? How does the rest of the academic world view a business school? And you'll have lots more personal experience of this probably than me, but it seemed to me that universities often see business schools as newcomers, as outside of the mainstream, as maverick perhaps, as organisations that don't necessarily quite fit with the traditional grain of the university. They're typically more commercially focused, more demand-driven, more student-centred, than universities. Gross generalisation, I realise, but typically that might well be the case. And have been insulated from the most immediate impact of government policy on fees and student number controls and so on, particularly those that are much less heavily reliant on undergraduate students and fees. But the interesting thing about those observations is the extent to which they are now exactly the imperatives that the rest of the sector is dealing with. The need to be more innovative and maverick, the need to be more demand-driven and more student-centred, and the need to operate in a world where the only customer isn't the UK government. Actually, there's a bunch of customers out there, including students, but also lots of research funders and so on. So there's a question here about the value of the business school model for the rest of the university sector. But there's also a question about the value of the relationship with the university for business schools and the ability to use that relationship in a more powerful way for business schools as well as for the university. One more grid, and then I'll stop. This one's even simpler, it's 2x2, where we mapped the kinds of responses that universities and business schools can make to the future environment. Two very simple axes here. The horizontal is between the provider-led model, the model where universities sort of own the curriculum and own what should be taught, what should be researched, and so on. And on the right-hand side, demand-led, where the buyers, the consumers, the funders are determining the nature of the education and the nature of the research that's carried on. The vertical axis is a slightly harder thing to get your head around in a sense, but it's a perspective from open to closed, the traditional closed model of what the university does to one that is open access, that is driven by MOOCs and all those good things that mean that the world of higher education is sort of out there rather than in here in the university. Now, the traditional position of universities is what we call university rules. That's sort of where universities have traditionally operated in a provider-led world, in a relatively closed environment, where universities have decided what good looks like. Peer review has been the arbiter of research quality, and universities have decided what they should teach the kinds of education that should be delivered. Gross generalisation, again, there have of course already been flexes around that. In the top quadrant, what we're seeing is universities moving to the world that we here call co-opetition, where there is much more teaching across boundaries. Traditional disciplines don't mean so nearly so much, and there's an opportunity to create modular-type learning and learning which is more open and relevant to the modern world and accesses multiple sources, learning that perhaps uses different universities over a period of time, that is built much more around a set of needs and learning artifacts than was traditionally the case. In the other direction is what we call learning lives, which is the notion of working towards student demand, essentially, and employer demand, and producing learning that is purposeful for the wider world. And that may have some overlap with the co-opetition market as well, but the notion of things like course lengths being designed around student need, start dates when students want them, short-term intensive courses, long-term modular courses, students doing a bit of a degree and then coming back and doing some more later after doing some work. Those kinds of different models of learning that are designed around choice and student need. The hardest bit of all is the top right, and I can't really tell you what's in there because I think that's emerging. We've given it the name Wiki Learning, but the notion of an entirely open and undefined and demand-driven market. And I think there's some interesting questions about exactly what that would look like. And it's early days, and I guess we'll find out. I wanted to finish with just some sort of practical thoughts about what all this means and the stuff I've been talking about, what it might mean, particularly for the relationship between universities and business schools. The first thing is cross-disciplinarity has to be key. It seems to me that the world is looking at things like solving problems of food security, and that requires life sciences, it requires agriculture, it requires business, economics, and various other disciplines to come together in both the education and research worlds to solve real problems and to create the skills base that the economy needs for the future. The neat traditions of disciplinarity no longer fit that world. Of course, it also involves relevant curricula. Talked a bit about that. The structure of curricula, but also the content of curricula, of course, needs to be relevant to future needs. It means engagement with the wider world. And Steve mentioned that a minute ago, the importance of engaging with business, but also with other stakeholders, including government, but as a stakeholder in the wider world rather than as a funder. It also involves problem-based learning approaches, whatever that might mean, but seeing universities as in the business of solving problems rather than in the business of teaching or of research. And finally, it must involve some form of technology-enabled learning, blended learning models, the use of technology as well as face-to-face learning and other approaches, peer-based learning and so on. So those are some thoughts. I hope that is at least sparks some ideas about the importance of the relationship between business schools and universities. There are some examples on the right, which I won't go into unless anybody would like to in the Q&A session, where there are some examples of some really interesting things where individual organisations have done that. You may know about some of those, and you may well have examples from your own experience as well. Thank you.